You're now plugged in to the Delphi podcast.
What's up, guys? Welcome back to the Delphi podcast. I'm Tom Shaughnessy, and I help lead Delphi Ventures, as well as host some of the most in-the-weeds and thought-provoking guests across crypto, spanning Layer 1s to DeFi, NFTs, and beyond. The goal is to have fun, but also to dive deep and offer foundational episodes on projects and founders. Also, check out our research on Delphi Digital or miss out on the most compelling research there is. It's up to you. As a reminder, nothing said on this podcast is a solicitation to buy or sell any security or token or to make any financial decisions. Delphi Ventures may hold tokens mentioned, so check out our transparency page in the show notes for more info. With that, let's dive in. See you guys on the other side. Hey, everyone. Welcome back to the podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Tom Shaughnessy. I'm one of the co-founders here at Delphi. Today, I'm thrilled to have on Sahil, who is the founder of Gumroad. Sahil, how's it going?
It's going great. It's going good. How are you?
Good, man. You getting ready for the holidays, the classic rush and all the travel?
Oh, yeah. It's like the last week of... I have three different projects up in the air with Gumroad and then my fund and then my book that just came out. So trying to inbox zero all three of those projects before Monday.
Nothing crazy. That's nice. Well, Sahil, let's do a general kind of guest intro. Give us a bit of your background and, you know, your life. And we're going to spend a lot of time on the history of Gumroad, but would love to learn a little bit about you before we get started.
Totally. Yeah. So I was born in New York to parents who immigrated from India. Grew up primarily in Singapore and moved to the U.S. To go to school at USC in Los Angeles, which is where I got really serious about startups. I didn't realize that there was a word to call like building software. And I learned about startups and venture capital and all of these sorts of things. Ended up dropping out of school as a freshman to join Pinterest full time as employee number two, where I was kind of a designer, engineer, hybrid, sort of primarily my big sort of shipment there was Pinterest for iPhone. Kind of stupidly had left early before my stock vested. So, you know, that's kind of my not buying Bitcoin in 2011 sort of mistake or whatever. But left Pinterest to start a company called Gumroad. I was very excited about two things. One was starting a company. I felt like there's no better learning than founding something and being forced to figure everything else out yourself, basically, or your business dies. And then just this idea that we were going to head to a world which is still playing out, you know, with crypto and Web3 and everything else. It's exciting to see. But basically a world in which everyone was going to build an audience online, sort of permissionless, gatekeeperless. And the missing component that I felt back in 2011 when I started Gumroad was like, well, payments, right? Like, it's cool that you could build an audience like Justin Bieber can now tweet instead of doing like a, you know, a magazine interview with like People Magazine or something. Like, that's great. But like what comes next is like I assume that at some point Justin Bieber's not going to need all the other intermediaries that still exist, right? On the payments, commerce, the label, the marketplace, you know, there are all these people who take fees out of this thing that should effectively be peer-to-peer, right? In my head. And so that's why I left, started Gumroad. And Gumroad was effectively kind of like a super simple way for people to sell digital products directly to their audiences on social media primarily, but also via their email, blog, wherever they may happen to build up an audience online. We make it super easy to sell that content. And we take a tiny cut, you know, which is 5% or so. That's kind of the brief thing. And then Gumroad, you know, have been running that from 2011 till today. So I guess 10 and a half years. So it's been quite a journey. Raised a bunch of money, raised over $10 million in VC, raised a $5 million crowdfunding round, did a round of layoffs. You know, all of the things that I feel like you could do in a startup, I sort of got the chance to do in a single startup, which is pretty cool. Like, I feel like Gumroad's lived multiple lives already at this point. But yeah, still going, still chugging along, still shipping features. And yeah, that's kind of the brief background. And I guess I invest in startups a lot. Last year, I launched a rolling fund. One of the first rolling funds with AngelList, and that's been going pretty well. So looking to scale that up in 2022, and yeah, it's been fun to get back into the startup industry. I feel like I took a break in 2017. I left San Francisco Bay Area and disconnected with it for a while, and then kind of reconnected in like 2019 or so when I wrote this blog post reflecting on my failure to build a billion-dollar company, which kind of went viral and, you know, was ironically meant to be my goodbye to the startup industry. Like, Sia, this was my set of learnings, you know, and it was actually kind of my hello again, like my Phoenix moment, which was, you know, tends to happen. I feel like, right? Life is quite entertaining.
No, it is. It's a hell of an overview. I mean, starting at the beginning, what was your decision process like with leaving Pinterest, right? Like, you know, I read your post and it was phenomenal, but to your point, what went through your head at that stage? Was it like, did you recognize how big, I guess, Pinterest would be, but you still wanted to do Gumroad anyway? Or was it more so, you know, you weren't sure about Pinterest and you said, hey, you know what, I want to bet on myself and do this? Because you're obviously a very early employee there. I'm sure you have some more stories, but you did make a move at a pretty pivotal point in their life cycle too.
Yeah. I mean, I think there was a lot that went into that decision, but probably the biggest one was this sort of sense of market timing, right? That was kind of like early 2011 and, you know, the iPhone app store stuff was, you know, getting really crazy. And obviously Pinterest and Instagram and Snapchat and all these things were kind of happening, Slack, Stripe, Square, et cetera. And I felt like, wow, this is like the best time ever to start a company. And if I don't do it, you know, I don't know when there will be another wave, right? And I just couldn't, once I got thinking about, oh, I can start a company, which I didn't know I could, to be honest. Like, I think what happened was I built Gumroad as a weekend project and it was one of many weekend projects. And I started getting emails from investors who would find it, you know, like happens all the time now, right? You know, people sliding into your DMs, et cetera, saying, hey, like, you know, I'm a VC or whatever. Like, if you start a company, let me know, I'd love to invest, which now I get to do, which is fun. But that really, when I started thinking about like, wait, what? Like, I can start a company. Like, I was, I think, 18 or 19 at the time. I could raise from top tier investors and effectively like dramatically accelerate my pace of learning, right? And effectively my career trajectory, because I knew at some point I wanted to start a company. The sort of prudent decision would have been to like stay at Pinterest for a few years, probably financially at least. But I just was so impatient. And I think the other thing that kind of corrupted my decision-making was I had only one experience in startup land, which was like picking a company like Pinterest, which is when I joined, had a $5 million valuation. And by the time I left, I was quite confident that this was going to be a multi-billion dollar company. Like when I did the kind of Google Sheets calculations on what I was doing, you know, obviously I was owning 100% of a new thing versus, you know, slightly less than 1% of Pinterest at the time. Like what, you know, what do those, you know, dynamics look like? But I just felt like building something from scratch, learning all of those things, like would just compound, you know, over the next few decades, you know, in a much, and I think that kind of played out. Like certainly my Pinterest stock, I think the math would be probably around $100 million worth of stock that I gave up. But like, I think that's, you know, just the amount of learning and cool stuff that I've been able to do and people I've been able to meet, I think like far outweighs that, right? But that was kind of what went into it. Is like once you, I think, get incepted about, wait, I can start a company, I can raise money, I can hire people. All of a sudden, like going into work, you know, becomes a little bit more like, it's a little bit like the crypto rabbit hole, right? Like you can't stop thinking about it, right? And I think once that happens, kind of the writing is on the wall. And yeah, so that's kind of why I ended up leaving. And it was, yeah, it was tough. Like Pinterest was definitely a rocket ship. I think they just closed or were about to close the Series B from Andreessen. But yeah, I just felt like if I struck gold once, like why can't I strike gold again? You know, and it'll be my own thing. It'll be my own idea. And so, yeah, that's kind of how I thought about it.
No, I mean, it's respectable, right? Like I know I spend more time on finance side on Wall Street. So I know people that left, you know, 100K jobs for crypto. So it's a little bit easier, but to bet on yourself when you're in such a good position, like that's admirable, right? Because you're actually doing what you want to do, I guess, instead of just getting comfortable.
Totally. And I find that like, I don't know, like I try to play the alternative universe in my head. And like, I'd like to think that like maybe the prudent thing would be to like stick around for a year and then leave or something. But truthfully, I think like you kind of become the story that you tell yourself, right? And so I think if I stuck around, like, you know, I would make a very different set of decisions than what I ended up meeting, but like, or making, right? But the story of I'm going to quit my job at Pinterest and start a company, like I'm signing myself up kind of psychologically for a very different journey, right? Which I think compounds in a very different way.
No, I totally respect that. So, I mean, diving into Gumroad a bit, you know, why do creators choose to sell on Gumroad? Like, what are the key features for them? Like, what drives them to want to sign up? Is it just the no fees? Is it, you know, because it's free to start? Like, you guys have helped, I think it's over 100,000 creators make like over $500 million, if my stats are not probably a little outdated. But, you know, what are the key drivers to attract people to work on Gumroad?
Yeah, I mean, I think the ultimate key driver of our growth is creators seeing other creators find success, right? And I think I underrated actually like how important money was for people. And ultimately, people want to make money. Money is great. Money is awesome. Money you can spend on rent and food and all of these other amazing things. And so I think when people see someone find success in a very new kind of way without sort of traditional education, you know, via a four-year university degree or via traditional employment, via, you know, just getting a job, like, I think that inspires a lot of people, right? Just like watching people start companies without, you know, I don't know, having an MBA, right, inspired me to feel like, oh, I don't actually need a lot of these sorts of things. I would say where Gumroad fits today, obviously in the last 10 years, like the creator economy has kind of become a buzzword and there's so much sort of market saturation at this point. I think the way that we've kind of started to position ourselves is as the best way to get started, right? So maybe not the best way to scale, maybe not like the best platform to run your newsletter, which I would say is probably Substack or a membership, which might be Patreon. But if you're just getting started and you don't know, should you have a newsletter? Should you have a membership? How do you think about this? I think Gumroad, we really want to be kind of like the place to try stuff, right? Which means things like, you know, free to start, you know, no monthly subscription fee or anything like that. You should be able to get access to all the features without, you know, no premium offering or, you know, monthly anything really. We got rid of that earlier this year, actually. It means that, you know, all of the everything is just super simple. It's very friendly. One thing I learned building Gumroad is that creators are not the most forward-thinking people, or the most tech savvy, you know, they're sometimes some of the least tech savvy people I've ever met. And so building a UI that is just like super simple, super clean, super approachable, you know, Gumroad will never be like the insanely, you know, Bloomberg terminal, you know, looking thing, right? That like allows for power creators to make tens of millions of dollars a year, and has all this extra cool functionality to it. It's going to always be super simple, really, you know, really quick and easy to get started. You know, starts out beautiful, like, you know, like it's just much more constrained, I think, which is what people really need when they get started. And hopefully we can build out more stuff so that people stay, they don't churn over time, but we're just comfortable with it. You know, like there's nothing wrong, I think, with saying, hey, we're really good at, you know, at being a high school and there's places where you go to college, right? And I think hopefully we can retain those people over time. And I think we will. And we have, you know, 100,000 people who still love Gumroad. But I think really focusing on what we call $0 to $1, kind of a joke on the Peter Thiel book. Like we want to help people go from $0 to $1 and just really focus on that, because I think that is sort of like the unlock for many people, right? Like once you make a dollar from a stranger on the internet, it's like, wait, what? Like that's possible. I can do that. Like what else can I do? And so I think the more that we can focus on just like unlocking that for people, like I think the better off the world is, right? It's probably not the best strategy, to be honest, to maximize GMV or revenue. But I think we've just kind of taken a different angle at sort of how we think about Gumroad and our mission, which is like, how do we unlock value, create value for people that doesn't necessarily, you know, inflate the value of the company or the, kind of the equity of the shares themselves.
That's really cool. Now I could see why people want to build on Gumroad. It makes a lot of sense. But before we go into like the future of Gumroad, I mean, I read your blog post, or I reread it last night, and it's a pretty incredible journey, right? Like I'm going to probably botch the timeline here, but I mean, you raised a bunch of money, you know, you built up a company, and then stuff started to go a little sideways. You know, you had to fire everybody and then you rehired everybody. And I was trying to read through like on that post, like what was the key to your success over such a long period of time? And I guess the thing to me was like your consistency. So, you know, your ability to just, you know, build despite having money or a team or not. And then two, it kind of sounded like everything you did was for your creators, like shipping products, shipping features. You know, I read that you woke up every morning and answered all the support emails or messages. Like, I mean, just thinking back to your journey, I'm not sure what question I should ask you here, but I'm just trying to figure out like how you stayed at it, I guess, for so long, despite all the adversity that you faced here.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I mean, definitely the consistency, I think, was key, right? Like, I remember talking to Ben at Pinterest a while ago, and one of the questions I asked him was like, you know, how do you, like, what indicates, I mean, this is a question people are still trying to figure out, which is like, what commonalities do like success stories have and, you know, and failures have, right? Like, how do you become more successful? And he said something really I thought profound to me at the time, which was basically like the only thing they all the people who failed have in common is that they basically gave up. Because if they haven't given up yet, then inherently they're still in the potentially successful category, right? And that was like really like, I was like, oh yeah, that makes sense. Like as long as you don't give up, and I think Pinterest was like his third or fourth kind of idea or even company, you know, that he had started. And obviously Pinterest kind of worked. And that really stuck with me. And I was like, okay, I need to pick an idea that I will work on, you know, for better. Like the truth is like, I didn't know what else to do, right? Like, it's not like I was like, oh, I can go start another company and solve this other problem for this. It's like, no, I'm happy. I picked a problem that I like, a group of people I like working for. And so if I started from scratch, I'd pick a similar thing. So like, why not just continue doing what I'm doing, right? So I think that consistency, that commitment to just constantly like, you know, like there's that, the Finding Nemo quote, right? Like just keep swimming, right? That sort of just keep swimming was kind of my approach. Like I'm just keep swimming. I'm just going to keep shipping. I can do that. You know, I know how to do that. I don't need a team. I don't need VCs to do that. Anyone can ship. And so I'm just going to keep doing that. And I'm going to put the creators first. I think that was also really, really important. Because the minute you don't do that, then I think it's a lot easier to move on to the next thing, right? Like, if you lose the mission, if you're like, oh, I'm doing this for the money, then obviously when the money doesn't look like it's going to show up, then you like, you know, you find something better to do, right? Like the people who left crypto in 2018, right? Like you don't want to be one of those people. You want to find a larger mission that you're like, no, I'm going to be in this thing for, you know, I'm going to buy and hold, right? Like I'm going to do this for 10 years. I think that's really, really key. And then I'd say like the last thing that I think I did pretty well is that I just was super communicative with everybody, that it, you know, it made it easier when I had to do layoffs, when I had to tell investors this thing wasn't working, when we failed to raise the Series B. I think it helped a lot that I was always super communicative with like, hey, this thing, you know, we might have to do a round of layoffs. Like our Series B is not going to come together as easily as our Series A was, or did. And I think that gives you a level of trust and integrity that like when you have to make hard decisions, like laying people off, that trust pays off because they're going to say, hey, if you were like some crappy CEO, you know, when shit hits the fan, they all bounce, right? They were in it also for the money or whatever other reason. But I think when you know, they're willing to kind of bet on you as a person, and that kind of reputational damage that you would take otherwise, like I think really kind of helps people because, you know, at least for me, that was really, really important. But yeah, just like, just doing it, you know, just waking up and saying, this is my job. This is what I signed up for. I'm going to be working on Gumroad for the next sort of 10 years. And I'm already, you know, I'm 5 years in, like, this, you know, I'm making good progress. Like why stop now? You know, kind of maybe a little bit too much of sunk cost fallacy, but yeah, I don't think there's any real easy answers. You know, it's kind of like going, you know, running a marathon. Like what do? You just run. I don't know. it's like you just run short distances and they get longer over time and your heart gets better and your legs get better. And eventually you can run a marathon. Like, and there's no real secrets. There's no special sauce. Like you just need to, you know, go for a run every day or two or whatever. Right. And I think often like building a profitable business, it kind of sounds really simple. It's like you talk to some people, you figure out, oh, they have a problem. I also have this problem. Like there's a market here. You build a solution. Your solution is probably off, right? You probably don't have perfect product market fit. So you talk to customers and you just, you know, you kind of try to sell your product until you update the product when you fail, every time you fail, and until you have product market fit, then you grow and you hire a team and then you talk to more customers and you just keep doing that. And that's literally like, that's what you do when your startup is working, and it's what you do when your startup is not working, right? Like it's kind of very, I think a very similar sort of thing. But simple doesn't mean easy, right? Like it's not easy to go for like a 30-mile run, even though it's simple on its head, right? On the surface. And so I think it's just saying, look, this is what it takes, and being honest about it and saying, you know, this is the journey that I signed up for. And frankly, I don't have anything better to do. So, you know, I'm going to keep doing it. And I basically just did, you know, I like sort of just never stopped doing it, you know, and that's kind of what it takes is just not stopping, you know? At least that's what worked for me, right? Like maybe the answer somebody else might say is like, well, I actually spent way too long working on this thing that ended up not working anyway. But the important thing that I think always got me excited about Gumroad is like, we were literally giving money to creators every month, right? Regardless if VCs wanted to give us money or not, I could look at the dashboard and say like, today, this many creators made this much money. And that's real money that's going to go towards rent, groceries, college funds, alcohol, who knows, right? Like, I don't know, but that's real. That's real. And like turning that off, like the just was just so difficult for me, right? Like looking at and saying what, like, why? Because I want to start a new company. Like these creators no longer get to make $2.5 million a month. Like it just didn't make sense to me to do that. I would say the other thing is I never felt super attached to the startup industry. I think a lot of people, the reason that they, you know, shut down or they sell and they start again is because they're kind of playing a status game to a sense, right? You know, there are a lot of people who are like, hey, you could sell this, sell it to Square, Stripe, Medium, Patreon, whatever. It doesn't really matter how much you sell for, but you can say you acquired on LinkedIn, right? And then you can start a new company. And I don't know, that just felt like a little disingenuous to me, you know? And I could never get to a place, this goes back to putting creators first, where doing that would allow the product to continue to exist. Like I would just, I didn't have a high degree of confidence that Square buying the company meant that Gumroad would, you know, the story that people say, like, oh, collaboration, synergies, like we're going to grow faster together. Maybe. Certainly, but ultimately what that means is Jack is now the CEO of Gumroad and he gets to decide whether Gumroad lives or not versus me, right? And so that's I know that was a long answer, but that's kind of how I thought about it.
No, it's a hell of an answer. I love how much you're focused on consistency. I mean, we definitely went through that at Delphi in 2018 when it was a pretty brutal bear market. So totally, I have so much respect for you there, especially over your time period. And being really open with people makes a lot of sense, right? They're part of the journey. They know you're not screwing around with them. It makes a lot of sense. I guess I'm trying to figure out what advice you can offer to the crypto folks, given your story, right? Like with your story, you had an insane amount of consistency. You showed up every day. You know, you had this pretty much product market fit from the get-go, right? Like I think you had a post or went on Product Hunt or something and you had like 50,000 views or something overnight. But with crypto, it's kind of different, right? Because these founders have like, you know, zillions of dollars overnight and, you know, they face certain issues like you do, but it's a little bit, I guess, more of an accelerated timeline where they have to scale faster. They have to spend the money. They have to find product market fit. They have to scale. So it's a little bit different than a Web2 company. What advice would you offer the crypto founders, or do you think that they're doing things wrong or right? Or do you think the model's screwed up? We can get it to the creator economy and Web3 in a bit, but wondering what advice you'd offer the crypto founders going through this.
You know, I think Chris Dixon had a great quote the other day that I saw on Twitter that was something like, you know, the investors that join, you know, the sort of latest to join, the first to leave, right? You want investors who've been through a bear market, like, you know, the people who are, you know, all the VCs that I know who are getting into Web3 in 2021, awesome, you know, no complaints about that. But also, like, if the market crashes, like, my guess is a lot of those, you know, these people will be the first to leave, right? And so you want to pick partners all along the stack. This, I think, goes to employees, you know, users, customers, token holders, investors, whatever, right? Like, everybody, you want to pick people who are also going to be consistent, right? I think in that way, because this is like a long, even though, yeah, you want product market fit quickly, you want to scale fast and you have all this money that you want to deploy and allocate kind of capital effectively. Ultimately, you want to be doing this for 5, 10, maybe longer, right? Like if you're enjoying yourself, like why put an end date on it, right? Just do it as long as you want to. Yeah, I think you want to make sure that you're picking the right kind of people and you're also really solving a problem, right? I think this is something that obviously crypto often, you know, this gets complicated because of the kind of the regulatory nature of a lot of securities and all that kind of stuff. But ultimately, you want to figure out what problem am I solving? Who am I solving it for? Am I excited about both of those things? And, you know, do I have a team around me that's also kind of excited? And are we approaching it the right way? And I would say the most important thing, and this is the mistake I think I made the most at Gumroad. If I were to look back and be like, man, I wish I did a better job of that, which is to just be really honest about how, like, are we really solving the problem, right? And I think the mistake that I made at Gumroad is, you know, I mentioned kind of like the reason I started Gumroad was like we wanted to effectively disintermediate all these middlemen, right? And create this kind of more direct, sort of more efficient creator-consumer relationship, right? And more efficient also means we take a much smaller cut, which is better for the creator, better for the consumer. They get to talk, all that kind of stuff, right? Like Apple doesn't give you any of this data. Amazon doesn't give you any of this stuff, right? But I think we should have been more critically kind of analyzed, like, well, what does this future look like? And is 2012, 2013, like, are we in line with our vision? And I think if we did that honestly, the answer is no. Like, we thought every independent filmmaker was going to sell direct. Netflix 10x'd in stock price, right? Like, clearly there was kind of a disconnect between kind of the hypotheses that we were making and, you know, what reality turned out to be. And, you know, effectively every startup is kind of like a scientific experiment to, you know, test out some sort of set of hypotheses, right? Or any fund or any real kind of enterprise, right? And so I think the kind of crypto kind of founder, I think, should really be like, okay, what problem are we solving? What does the future look like if we do solve these problems? And every month, every quarter, every year, like, are we getting closer to that vision? And if not, totally fine. We still want to solve the problem, but maybe there's a different angle here, right? I think, for example, as the Gumroad founder, maybe it's like we didn't actually disintermediate anybody. And Netflix is more powerful than ever. Disney is more powerful than ever. There's kind of more centralization, not less. And that's not to say we lost. It's just that we haven't won yet, right? And then, like, seeing what's happening with crypto and Web3 and, you know, kind of this, the permissionless, trustless secondary market. Like, I'm very fascinated by that business model. Like, maybe there is a better answer. And maybe we didn't solve it. And by the way, none of the Web3 two companies have yet solved it, right? Like, being open to just, like, you know, kind of like the laws of physics, like, Newton thought he solved it, right? It was a lot better than what we had before. Turned out he was wrong, quote unquote, right? Like, there's still more to go. And so I think that's also kind of important. Just be really honest about what you're building, what problem you're trying to solve. And yeah, just be super, super consistent. And I think people who are in it for the money, like, I think it's just, they're just not gonna, one, it's a lot harder to make money when you're in it for the money. It's not hard to invest if you're willing to hold for 10 years, right? Like, I can predict pretty accurately on a 10-year horizon whether something is going to be worth more or less than it is today. Doing that on a, you know, tomorrow is very, very difficult, right? So generally, if you're willing to be patient, you're willing to take longer bets, you will just have a much higher chance of being correct, right? It is much easier to say, I can predict, you know, the cost of a Tesla, you know, 5 years from now than, like, tomorrow with all these supply chain issues and this and that. Like, you know, like, it's, so I'd like to think about that too. Like, think about the long-term big picture stuff. And then maybe one thing I'd also add is just, like, I really think technology is really important. Like, the reason we, you know, all this stuff exists is because, like, there's research, there's science, the science leads to technology and engineering that, you know, to implement it. And ultimately that's why, like, what we do gets to become so incredibly valuable so quickly, is because we take something that has not really been implemented in practical use, and then we, you know, we solve a problem and it creates a lot of value for the world. And so I always like to go back to, like, what is the technology, right? What is the, like, read the white papers, right? Like, get excited about the technology, because ultimately that's why we're all doing this, which is we want to take technology, give it to everybody, and then see all the cool stuff that gets to happen because of the technology. And so I find sometimes there's these projects and I just have a hard time getting excited about them, because I'm like, you're not wrong, but, like, I get more most excited about the technology and you're more excited about art or culture. And I'm like, I like that stuff too, but, like, I really think that large unlock here is the technology. What does the technology let us do today that we weren't able to do yesterday? Like, proof of work, right? Like, that is a clear technology that is sort of fundamentally useful and has created, like, $1 trillion worth of value, right? Off of, I don't know, like, something that you can summarize in, like, a couple pages, you know, pretty crazy stuff. But that's the, I think that's the brilliance of technology and, like, how impactful it can be, right? It doesn't have to be big. It just has to solve the problem. And if it solves the problem in a single line of code, you know, cool, you know?
No, that's really cool. I really like your answer on really being honest with yourself if you're solving something. I guess the smart founders spend a lot of time doing that before they launch a project, and the okay ones maybe do that, you know, after they get started. Or, you know, it seems like if you spend more time, like, not taking action, trying to figure out what you want to do, you're more passionate kind of once you're plugged in. I mean, do you have any advice to founders going through that? Because I feel like there's a lot of crypto projects that don't make sense to us on the ventures team, but, you know, we look at, but I feel like some of them just aren't that well thought out. But on the flip side, you're in a space where you have to move 1,000,000 miles an hour. So, like, if you have the glimpse of an idea, you know, moving on it and building around it is, you know, most of the battle. But on the flip side, some of the founders are a little half in, half out because they don't know if it, you know, really has potential.
Yeah. There's a painter that I love, and he had a great quote, and he said, you don't have to be right, but you do have to be certain. And he was talking about kind of impressionist painting, but I really like that. Like, I think ultimately, if you're half in, half out, even if your idea is perfect, you're not going to win, because someone else is going to be fully in and win because of that, right? And so I think there's, like, ultimately, there is going to be a lot of uncertainty. Like, it doesn't matter how much you do analyze the truth and try to be honest and do research and come up with a strategy and, you know, revisit your priors, et cetera. Like, you're always going to, you know, this is high risk, right? Ultimately, like, there is a lot of uncertainty baked into this. And so I do think you have to commit at some point, and you should, you know, I would say you should get to a place where you're talking to customers and going back and forth, and you have some feedback loop, right? Kind of like the old DA loop, right? Like you want to consistently build something, get feedback on it from real people, from the market, and then rebuild, right? Like figure, change something and then do it again and again and again and again. The faster you can get to that feedback loop, the better. And that feedback loop might be like a white paper that you're getting feedback on, right? It might be a product, it might be Figma mocks. But I think getting a real feedback loop with people outside the company, I think is really just really, really fundamentally important. And I find that like a lot of the people, they don't want to commit to like a concrete, like I think that forces you to have higher fidelity, right? Like, well, what does it actually look like? What actually happens when you click this button? Like, it's fun to like riff, effectively just BS with your friends about like, wow, like the whole world is going to change and there are all these cool things you can do. But I kind of think about it like bullshitting at the bar, to be honest, which is like fun. You know, but like, does this actually do anything for the world? No, ultimately what does stuff for the world is a bunch of people sitting in front of laptops, typing away, building stuff, solving bugs, you know, fixing bugs, doing pretty trivial, boring kind of stuff, right? Yeah, I would say just getting a ton of feedback is the most important. And then like, you're not going to be right the first time. So I think having this approach where you are certain, you know, you're acting certain, but then, you know, saying, look, if we don't figure this out in a year or two, like we'll start a new project. And I think there is a rush. Certainly, like it feels like a gold rush in which you're like, oh, no, that boat's leaving. There's not going to be any boats left. Right. What am I going to do? But I find that like my guess is there's going to be more boats tomorrow. And, you know, like this is a rapidly growing industry. And if there were one boat yesterday and, you know, or one boat 10 years ago and 100 boats yesterday, I think saying, oh, there's going to be one boat tomorrow and then zero. Like, no, the answer, like just draw the curve. Like we're probably just early, you know? And so I do think it's good to wait for the right idea. Like if you don't have an idea that you are super excited about, like also I would say go work somewhere, right? I think this is also super underrated advice. Like if you want to be a founder, like what did I do? I joined Pinterest as employee number two, right? Like how much did I learn, you know, using their balance sheet, you know? Probably quite a lot, right? And it's quite kind of like, you know, like I would go get a job at Coinbase or, you know, Uniswap or something like that. And like really, like I love learning by osmosis, right? Like I love just looking at what the engineers and designers at Gumroad are doing. And like, I just get smarter, you know? I'm like, oh, that's how you solve that problem. You know, cool. Now I know. So I'd say like get in, like hang out with builders and then start building yourself. But yeah, I would say maybe the other thing is spend time outside of the crypto echo chamber, right? Like ultimately, like, for example, like many people don't know that like most of the world doesn't really like Elon Musk, like doesn't really like NFTs, like thinks crypto's, you know, like the largest cause of climate change in the world for some reason, right? Like this is like, if Gumroad tweets about crypto, like we will get canceled. We have done it. We have been canceled, right? Like, and not to say that that's right or whatever, but just to say like, you have to understand, ultimately you're selling a product to a market, right? And if you want change, at some point we have to convince all these people that this is a good thing, or we have to get them to use it without them knowing that they're even using it or something, right? But ultimately, like we need every person to embrace this new technology, just like every person is going to embrace the internet, right? It's kind of inevitable. And so spend time with people who are super skeptical, right? Like don't just hang out with people who love what you're doing and love NFTs and love crypto and think it's going to change the world and everything's going to be tokenized. Hang out with people who are going to destroy your argument, like rip it to shreds. And that will make your argument much stronger, right? Like I bet you that the Ethereum white paper, the Uniswap V3 whatever, was not, you know, someone or a couple people hanging out with people who agreed, you know, it's like, no, you write a first draft and then you send it to a bunch of people and they rip it to shreds. I'm sure Delphi has this internally all the time, right? Like this is what you need.
Investment committee each week. Yep.
Yeah. It's, no, like if you really want to make an investment, the best thing you can do is get a bunch of people telling you why you should not do it. And if you still have conviction after that, then do it, you know, but don't be afraid.
That's my favorite quote. I totally agree with you. Having that, like finding your intellectual sparring partner or group and having them tear it to shreds an idea, it's the best way.
Yeah. And the fear is like, well, what if they tell me my idea is bad? It's like, well, then you just saved yourself years of heartache, right? It's like, well, why start?
Money, time.
Yeah.
Morale. Yeah.
Energy, blood, sweat, tears, you know? No, you want people to rip to shreds and steel man the thing. And then eventually you have something great. And this is, you know, this is like the path of every great idea, right? It's sort of the market just, you know, refines these ideas. You just have billions of people or hundreds of millions of people who like tell you what's right or wrong. You know, they vote with their dollars. But yeah, I think it's really important to just get something out into the market before that, make sure that it's, you know, you've kind of steel manned it, and then just get into that feedback loop of building, talking to people. You know, ultimately the same things that work in Web 2, I think in that principle, like will work in Web 3, right? Like those principles, will stay the same, you know, because ultimately we're all human beings.
Right? No, I'm with you. I'm just curious. When you were starting Gumroad, did you have that sparring partner? Did a friend or colleague or VC pace a heel? This is stupid. Like, you know, how hard was that road?
Honestly, I wish going back, I had more of it. I think the issue, and this is still kind of an issue today, is that people are so sort of portfolioized at this point, right? Where everyone is investing in lots of different things. And so sometimes it's hard to get someone who really cares enough about you to say, hey, you know, it's like you're dating someone, right? And your friend's like, hey, that person you're dating with, you shouldn't. Like, it's very hard to be in that position to do that. And most of the time it doesn't work because they like them more than they like you. And it doesn't really work. You kind of have to wait for them to figure it out, you know, for themselves. So I find that often happens in startups, but I definitely
have parents everywhere agree with you right now.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. But I had people like Naval was one of our first investors. Obviously, he's very loud about crypto, but he was loud then. I remember talking to him in 2011 and he was like, yeah, Bitcoin, this is, you know, makes total sense. Like the atomization of shopping carts, Gumroad makes, you know, like sell it directly on Twitter. Like I think having that conversation every year would have been really great with a bunch of, you know, like, well, why didn't this happen? Why isn't everyone selling direct on Twitter, you know, like we thought, right? Like, why not? Why isn't Bitcoin, you know, solving kind of like the microtransaction issue on the internet? Like, why aren't people paying per article instead of per month? And I think we would have, you know, probably made some different product decisions. I think if we had that rigor, you know, as early, you know, early in the company versus late, you know, like now we definitely have that rigor. It's also frankly a lot easier once you're profitable and successful, quote unquote. I find that it's easier to have that rigor because one, you have confidence in yourself, right? I'm like, it worked. Like Gumroad worked. And so I have confidence that like my strategy, which looked stupid in 2015 when I had to let everyone go, was actually a winning strategy. It just took a long time. And so I also find that like it's helpful to just like reframe a lot of these things. And so, yeah.
No, I like that. I like that a lot. Definitely works to have that sparring partner over time. And one thing I wanted to talk to you about, just switching gears a bit. So there's two sides of my next question. We'll start, I guess, with the first side. So users love Gumroad, right? Like a lot of what keeps you going and why you started this was your ability to, you know, give creators money every month, right? Like you said, that kept you going. I think in one of your posts each month, just being able to see that money flow to them and giving them a medium to do that, right? Now, having that relationship with your users is incredible, right? It's something, not to bring it back to the Web3 community, but it's something that Web3 projects would kill to have, right? They would kill to have that lock-in, right? Do you think that with Gumroad, if you were to decentralize it where, you know, I don't know, you know, just thinking offhand, like your creators had some say in the direction or they had some ownership over the protocol overall. Do you think that that would work well with your vision or wrong? Because I know in one of your posts, you also mentioned, and you just mentioned it earlier, you know, giving over the keys to a VC to let them have the direction would annoy the hell out of you. But, you know, giving it to the community might be a different story. So more so just wondering at a high level, if you think Gumroad in a true decentralized Web3 fashion would succeed or if you think it would hurt the project.
Yeah. I mean, I think there are pros and cons. And I think ultimately many of the, you know, like I think 10 years from now, looking back when we do have, you know, kind of like the next generation Facebook, Google, etc., like I think there's going to be a hybridization, right? Where you're going to have certain components be super, super, super decentralized. And then you're going to have other things that are pretty darn centralized, right? But I certainly see a lot of value in progressive sort of decentralization. There are many things that I kind of have sole control over that I don't think I should, frankly, have sole control over. Like, for example, I get to choose who gets to make money on the platform, right? If I want to deplatform someone, I have the ability and right to do that. But should I? This goes into, you know, you also want to prevent mob mentality, right? Like one thing I get to do as CEO is say, hey, everyone wants me to deplatform this person, but I don't want that because I don't think it's the right answer. And so, you know, there's kind of pros and cons too there. But I sort of joke that like Gumroad is like a Web 2.1 company in which we're slowly inching into the future and hopefully we'll meet somewhere in the middle. But, you know, we did a crowdfunding round where we raised $5 million from 7,331 non-accredited investors, primarily, right? Many of our own users. We could, in theory, give every one of those people an NFT. You know, now there are 7,000 NFTs, maps to kind of a PFP project. And then say, hey, if you have this, you can, you know, there's sort of a governance sort of method. There's a DAO that, you know, or whatever. There's some sort of proposal mechanism and you get to vote if you, you know, one NFT, one vote sort of thing. And maybe I as CEO just get to react to it, right? Just like the representative, you know, in Congress gets to react to what the constituents want, but they don't actually have to do what the constituents say. So I think there's a lot of interesting kind of like sort of dipping our toes in the water of decentralization. I think ultimately, like, I would love to not be CEO. And I think the answer is not a new CEO. I think the answer is no CEO. Like, I definitely think that, like, more and more of what I do should be either automated, but effectively just given effectively, like, Gumroad should be at some point a protocol, not a company, right? It should just be Rails that people can plug into. For a variety of reasons, I think that would be really awesome. So I definitely think that there's so much about DAOs and sort of decentralization that, like, I would love to embrace. I hate payments, you know, I hate accepting payments. I hate banking. I hate, you know, everything to do with KYC, AML. I had a call with Silicon Valley about a new product, a Silicon Valley bank, about a new product we're thinking about building. And they sent me an email saying, hey, you know, long list of bullets, all of these documents, you know, saying, hey, we, you know, this is what we need from you. Like, please send us, like, your policy on AML, your policy on KYC, et cetera, et cetera. And I was like, this is for a speculative new product that doesn't exist yet. And we will do the bare minimum. Like, we will do no, like, we don't enjoy doing any of this. Like, we're just doing all this stuff because you want us to. So just tell us what you want. Why are you, it's like that when the government says, like, tell us how much you owe in taxes. Like, you already know. Like, what do you, like, just tell me and I'll pay.
Like,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Like, we know you're going to jail if you're not right.
Exactly. And so, like, yeah, Silicon Valley banks, like, we won't give you a license unless you do what we say, but we're not going to tell you. You're going to have to, like, guess, or you're going to have to pay a bunch of consultants, a bunch of money to give you the same docs that everybody else has. And so I emailed back and I was like, we'll do what you want us to do. Can you give us templates, like, sane defaults, and then we can fork them? And they're like, no, we don't do that. And I'm like, you've been in business for how long? And you, like, you literally, every startup has to do the same thing. So I hate all this stuff. And I can't wait until there are no banks, only wallets, you know? I also can't wait until there are no companies, only organizations, you know? Because I think Visa should just be a protocol. Why is it a company today? Why? Like, what value do they do? And this is what companies do, right? They create a ton of value, a ton of innovation, and then they stagnate. They ossify. And new things eventually come and replace them. This happens to countries. This happens to companies. This happens to organizations, communities, everything. Certainly humans, right? And so why can't there be a, hey, you're getting really old, you know, innovator's dilemma starting to kick in. Now's time to turn into a protocol. You know, there's a way to do that, right? Just like either, oh, it's time to IPO. Well, now it's time to DAO, right? Like, why not? And so, yeah, I'm always, like, looking at kind of crypto and Web3 and figuring out how do we steal some of this stuff. You know, one of the things, I know this is not exactly what you asked, but, like, one of the things I spent a lot of my time thinking about at Gumroad, like, I really do actually think the creator economy is fundamentally broken. Like, I think the way that, like, people are talking about it, like, the next crazy big thing and that everyone's going to become a creator, I think, as someone who's been working in the industry for a long time, I think it's, like, very optimistic, very, very optimistic. And one reason I think it's broken, like, an example of how broken it is that effectively your biggest fans take the most risk. Right, they basically get the least reward. Why? Because they're effectively paying the most expensive price, because generally things get cheaper over time. Like, my book came out, it's $28. A year from now, it'll be like $18, and then, you know, et cetera, right? And there's no upside for them, right? There's only risk. Like, they have no idea how good the product is. They haven't even listened to it or watched it or consumed it. Like, they're pre-ordering. So all of us, like, it's just such a backwards sort of thing, right? You just get brownie points, I guess, if you, like, found them early or something. And so I love that aspect of crypto, right? Where you are actually rewarded for being early and you can actually make money versus spend money. And I love that idea because as a creator, the worst thing in the world is asking your fans for money, saying, hey, give me money. Why? For this, oh, it's an ebook, but it's free to, like, every, you know, what, like, how do you price a free, you know, marginally free thing? It's like, it's really hard. This is a reason that all this stuff is so difficult. But I love the idea that, like, well, maybe instead of selling a book, you know, giving away the book for free and then saying, but there's only a certain number of them. And if you want to buy one, you have to buy it from an existing owner. And then I get 10%. And then all of a sudden my marketing is not, hey, I have a new book out, buy my book. It's like, hey, I released some new content. Goes out for free to all the people who own this thing. And if you want it, you have to buy it from, you know, you have to basically buy it from someone who's already supported me in the past. To me, that's, like, very different, right? Like, I would be excited about, hey, I did this thing. Like, for example, Gumroad, I just get to build stuff. I don't have to really sell anything. I just get to build stuff and create value. And my shareholders are like, awesome, cool, right? This is what Tesla gets to. This is, like, what all public companies get to. And so the more we can, like, if we can unlock that for the average creator, effectively every creator has, like, equity in all of these different kinds of ways. Obviously, securities gets complicated, but I do think, like, there's that will happen. Like, I'm 100% confident that, you know, this sort of, these worlds will completely merge. Startup equity, NFT, all of this stuff will just blend together. It's going to suck for many incumbents, which is why it's taking so long. Or maybe it's happening a lot faster than people thought, actually. Like, I think there's many ways to look at this. Like, I think in many ways, crypto, you know, the price of Bitcoin, I think, is surprising to many people who've been in the industry for a long period of time. But you know, it does feel inevitable to me. Like at some point, these things will merge and this kind of technology will solve all these problems. And, you know, if the SEC is not cool with it, like the SEC will lose. Like they'll just lose a larger battle, right? Which I hope they don't want to do.
No, those are really good thoughts. I mean, you know, co-running our fund, I share the same concerns you do, right? Like seeing on-chain funds that just automate all of the back-end ops work, and your comparisons to those struggles within Gumroad are pretty interesting. And I also really agree with you, right? Firing yourself as CEO, like more people that could take on that role and automate it away. And I feel that way in Web3 too. One thing I wanted to ask you about is, you know, the merging of Web2 and Web3. I'm kind of the opinion that Web2 is frankly not able to compete with Web3. Right. Like I just feel culturally, you know, the whole cap table, CEOs, the 9,000 vice presidents, like I don't feel like they'll ever make the switch to giving up control and giving, you know, their creators and users like a real say or ownership or stuff like that. It just feels too big of a seismic shift in the way that they think and the way that they operate. Do you think that they will merge, or do you think that the Web2 businesses themselves will be pretty negatively disrupted? And I don't mean Gumroad. I mean more like Facebook, Instagram, possibly Pinterest.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, even Gumroad, you know, speaking to sparring partners, like, you know, Naval and I have talked about, like, does Gumroad play in this world? How does that look like? And frankly, like, the sort of, you know, we're definitely still exploring a lot of it, but like, it's just almost better to start a new company, frankly. And I think the reason is, you know, the way that I, sort of the mental model that I have is that, like, we've kind of built on top of all of these layers, right? And so, like, we started at ground level with, like, you know, basically banks and branches and ACH, and then, you know, and then credit cards, like all of this stuff, you know, has kind of been layered on top of each other. And crypto basically just feels like starting from ground level, right? Which means you lose all this stuff that's been built over time. You have to kind of build it all again. But the fundamental kind of assumptions that you're making are totally different. And for example, every single decision that's made in this old stack is like includes banks, right? Includes all of, you know, something as simple as banks, which just don't even exist in crypto land, right? They're just wallets. Like, why do you need a bank? I don't really know. Why do I give a bank? I guess because I don't want to hold a bunch of cash, but like it's all zeros and ones anyway. It's like, but you know, a lot of these things break down and had actually broken down, but because the skyscraper is so freaking tall, it's like, well, Stripe can just build on top of this instead of trying, you know, PayPal tried to kind of go a different route and, you know, sort of create a lot of what I think is happening now. So I think you're right. I think you're not going to see a bunch of Web2 companies really being able to embrace Web3. And I think that's actually great. Like, I think it's, you know, it's just, you know, there'll be new countries, there'll be new companies, there'll be new winners in this new ecosystem. And that's going to be, I think, really, really, really positive. And I don't think, you know, I'm not concerned that Gumroad's going to go away. I think, you know, these things will continue to grow and develop and maybe even get acquired by like Web3 properties over time or something like that, because I think they're great for, you know, getting communities and sort of, you know, we've spent 10 years building distribution and brand and traction and all these sorts of things, right? So I still think there'll be tremendous value to a lot of these things. But I do think, like, yeah, ultimately what you'll see is someone start a new company or protocol or whatever, and that will be the next Facebook, right? It will not have a board of directors. It will not have a cap table. It will not have traditional investors. Like, I just think it's kind of like bringing a knife to a gunfight, right? Like, just not, why bother, right? You can't, I mean, maybe if it was the only option, but like, there, like, anyone can get into crypto, like anyone. And you have to build a lot less because it's so composable. And so, you know, why would we use Gumroad if we could just totally start a new company? And like within 3 months, we didn't have to do files. We didn't have to do payments. We didn't have to do the secondary markets or exchanges. Like, we have effectively a more featureful Gumroad within 3 months. So like, why try to convince everybody who's used Gumroad and has a mental model for Gumroad, and, you know, instead of just starting a totally new thing and going to market with that, right? And so, yeah, I also think pseudonymity is also going to be really important in kind of the crypto economy. And so, like, even if I were to start a new company, I don't know if I would be using my sort of identity, you know. I would probably come up with a new one and start totally from scratch. And that would actually allow me to do crazier. You know, the thing that I have to run Gumroad through every time we do a crypto thought storm is kind of like, okay, how do we basically not make the company that we've already built liable to this new tiny experiment? Like, what's the point in a tiny experiment if it's just going to make the whole thing risky? And myself personally, right? And so I think starting totally from scratch, totally new identity, I was talking to Tim Shelf from The Loop Project. And yeah, that really convinced me, like, yeah, if I want to get into this stuff, start from scratch. Like, learn it, you know, learn it from ground zero. Also, like, I think it would be a good test for me. Like, I now have an audience, you know, there's more risks, to, you know, to saying certain things. Like, maybe it would be good for me to experience what it's like to be crypto native, to start from zero have no audience and have to build that from scratch. Because frankly, even without the Web2, Web3 stuff, like it's been a long time since I've done that, right? So I'm sort of trying to teach people how to do what I did, but I haven't done what I did in a long time, right? It's been a while. So, you know, it would be good to I think, start from scratch. So, you know, 2022, that's one of my kind of goals, is to come up with like an identity and really try to kind of build it up from scratch.
That's really cool. Yeah, no, I applaud you wanting to do it yourself. Like, I think it would be really cool to kind of get engaged, have a new personality, you know, see where you learn. From the investing standpoint, I mean, we've invested in known founders and anonymous founders in crypto. I'm going to be honest, I love that the ones that are anonymous push the bounds, but it's just so hard to replace that social credibility, you know, like going to get a drink with somebody or I mean, most of the founders that are anonymous, like eventually, you know, you find out who they are and meet them in person, but it's really hard to replace that. You know, that buy-in is hard to replace when you don't know who somebody is.
Yeah, no, you're totally right. I mean, I think ultimately, I do think sort of, you know, zero knowledge proofs may fit into this at some level, right? Where you can say, for example, I would love to say, hey, I have a lot of Twitter followers, right? I just don't have them on this account. And like, I want to sort of transfer some of my reputation without my whole identity, I think. So I think there's sort of a technology. This is like a problem that technology, I think, will solve in pieces over time. But yeah, I do think in-person is amazing, right? Like all this talk of remote and, you know, async and all this stuff. Like I love hanging out with people. I love going to a bar and just riffing with people for a bunch of hours, feeling like I'm not being recorded and I don't have to censor myself and I can just say stupid things. And, you know, like that's really, really helpful. Like, you know, so yeah, I definitely think like pseudonymity, like will not sort of be I'm not like a pseudonymous economy maximalist in the sense that like, oh, 100 years from now, everyone's going to be totally anonymous. Like, no, I think our meat bodies will be quite helpful and useful and we will use them and we will travel and do a lot of the things that we do today. But I think a lot of the work stuff will probably move online. But I struggle with it too. And even like, you know, as I invest more, as an investor, it's nice to have a reputation, right? It's, you know, why do people take your money? It's because you have a track record. You have a story. Obviously you're helpful and you have advice and, you know, but like a lot of being an investor is kind of like this brand moat, right? That you like this virtuous cycle where you do well and then people want your money because you did well. And so a vote from you is worth something, right? This is kind of like the university model, the YC model, right? You basically just become a picker over time. It's how you get the best deals. And it's very difficult to unseat that kind of moat, right? Like the Sequoia moat or the Y Combinator moat. So yeah, I often think about that. Like as an investor, you know, like it would be a terrible thing to start like a pseudonymous kind of venture firm, I think, for myself. Like I should rely on Gumroad and these sorts of things. But I think as a founder, sort of building something from zero to start, I think is a really good idea. And kind of like what Adiso did, right? Where he eventually came out and said, hey, this is who I am. And I think it's important to disclose kind of my identity. And so maybe that's some of what we see, right? Which is we kind of see this just like this progressive decentralization of companies. We might see this like progressive, I don't know what the opposite of anonymity is, you know, but nimity or whatever, from people who are like, okay, finally I can afford a security guard. And so I will now tell people who I am, right? Like that sort of thing, I think may happen.
No, I'm with you. It is interesting. And I know we're hitting an hour, but I just have a couple more quick questions for you. I saw a couple of your tweets and some of them resonated with me, right? Like, you know, the SEC moving slow and the US might, you know, kind of lose their complete edge by not being too progressive with crypto. And I'm very much paraphrasing and I might be totally off on what I'm remembering here. But, you know, I think, you know, the people in the government are great people just doing their job. I think that'll hopefully we can help them and inform them on the space and get them a bit more up to speed. But I guess the thing that, you know, you're like a titan in the Web2 space, right? Like we've seen in the crypto space, we've seen banks and regulators push back on crypto, but I don't know if we've seen the power of Web2 try and shut down Web3 yet, right? Like I don't, like Mark Zuckerberg's like embracing it, like, you know, Nike's buying companies with NFTs, but I don't think we've seen the full force of Web2 CEOs and their power really come in and say, hey, screw Web3, you know, we're going to crush you guys. Do you think that the Web2 culture clash, like, do you think that's a thing or do you think maybe I'm overthinking it and they'll just embrace it and buy their way in? Or how should we kind of think about it? Because you're a Web2 founder and like you're completely inviting of, you know, decentralization and the creator economy and all this stuff, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's really tough to say, right? Because I think some of these people don't even know why or what their motives may be, right? Like, I personally think that Zuck is a good dude who really has the best intentions out there, because I think most people have pretty decent intentions. And he's probably like, damn, I have way too much power. I hate testifying in front of Congress. Can I please decentralized myself.
Just want to go surf.
Yeah, exactly. I just want to surf with like a, you know, a face full of whatever.
Sunblock or sunscreen, whichever one of those.
Yeah, exactly. Like, let me just be weird. Like, you don't need to put a freaking camera in my face all the time, you know? So I personally believe a lot of these Web2 founders, the sort of, I think, deep thinkers, like the Patrick Collisons of the world, the sort of Toby Lutkes of the world, I think are really going to embrace it over time, especially the technology pieces, right? I think that's why the technology, I think, is so important. It's because that kind of is a universal language. Math is a universal language. So if you have like a new math solution, like that's really, you know, new proof, like that's really, really compelling broadly. I do think that one of the tensions is this kind of idea that like of Web 2 and Web 3, like it just makes it feel really mutually exclusive, right? It feels like the way that I like to think about it is that like, it's not Web 1 turned into Web 2, turned into Web 3. I think what actually happened was like Web 1 brought certain things online and then Web 2 brought things that Web 2, 1 didn't bring online, like yearbooks, right? Like brochures went online with Web 1, then yearbooks, you know, and photo galleries and collages and pinboards and all these sorts of other skeuomorphic kind of ideas we put online. But I don't think anyone in Web 1 was like, oh shit, Web 2, you know, like newspapers or New York Times and all these brochure websites like still exist. And I think Web 3 will bring online all these other things like gold, right? Web 2 didn't bring gold online, but Bitcoin did, right? Web 2 didn't really bring fine art, sort of the scarcity component of fine art online. NFTs did. Certainly didn't bring LLCs online. DAOs kind of are doing that, right? And so I like to think about it like this very non-competitive thing where we're all part of actually the same movement, which is offline to online, right? Software is eating the world, as Marc Andreessen said like 15 years ago, right? Like I think it's all the same movement, which is we're just trying to bring stuff online. Why? Because it's cheaper to move a zero, turn a zero into one than like a, you know, something else into something else, right? Like bits are just cheaper to move and change than atoms, right? So just better, it's better in every kind of, it's like Pareto superior, right? And so I think we're all kind of aligned in this. And I think the more we can say, hey, look, we're all literally trying to do the same thing, which is we're all trying to make things cheaper and faster and more efficient and more accessible. And until we live in a future in which, you know, there's like no fraud and we can trust everybody. And, you know, we don't even need passwords at that future. It's just like full trust. You know, we're going to have a bunch of trade-offs and these politicians are going to have to manage these trade-offs. And that's how I think about it. Like politicians manage trade-offs. Technology just removes them, just eliminates them. It's like, oh, we actually don't need politicians to manage the trade-offs because actually we built some technology that means that these are no longer conflicting. You know, like I would argue like Uber, like taxis, why do they regulate them so strongly? It's, well, I don't know, there are probably risks to taking a cab and all these sorts of things. And obviously lobbying and other things come in after that point, but in the beginning, right? Like there's probably some scam or there's like some rape or some bad thing that happens that they have to prevent. It's like a trade-off that they have to manage. And then Uber is like, actually, there's a better technology can solve this problem with ratings and data and GPS and your phone and all these things. And boom, now we actually don't need the regulations at all. And, you know, would be my case. Obviously, people would disagree with that. So I think the more that we can just say, look, we are all trying to get to the same place, which is one market. It's fully liquid. It's super transparent. Anyone can participate in it. Like everyone knows that's where we're going. Like I should be able to invest in a grocery store in Africa and that, you know, person should be able to invest in Gumroad and that person should be able to sell, you know, like it's just efficient, you know, like 24/7, no fee. Like I love the Jeff Bezos quote, which is like, stop thinking about the future. Like just think about, stop trying to predict what's going to change. You know, that's hard. Like just like, it's really easy to just bet on what people want and will continue to want, which is like goods, cheaper, fast. Like that's Amazon's thing. Like just the same stuff, but cheaper and faster. Right. Like if we can make it cheaper, we can make it faster. We think people are going to want that in 30 years, right? In 100 years, in a million years. And so I think just centering everyone around like the same goal and being like, we're all aligned. We all want the same thing. The SEC wants the same thing. You know, Web3 founders want the same thing. Web1 founders want the same thing. We all want the same thing. We all want technology to improve our lives and make things better, faster, cheaper, and closer. And that's why I love, like, Gumroad is really fun to work on for me because it's like, it is Web2. It is creator economy. It is kind of Web1. We did the crowdfunding thing. We're playing in Web3 slowly over time. And I do think this is all like one big melting pot of stuff, right? There is no metaverse, right? Like the metaverse is just a delineation that we've come up with. I don't know why, but like we just needed it to define a certain set of things. But like, what is that? No one knows what is, you know, it's not like you turn it on, you know, whatever. Like it's just a thing, right? It's like Sean Puri says, it's a time, not a place or whatever, right? That sort of thing. But it's just everything, you know? And I think the flack, and I see this a lot with the creators that I talk to who are very sort of left-leaning, progressive, often don't like a lot of the NFT discourse think it's full of scams and climate change. The answer is not, you know, is making them part of the camp, right? Like over time, they will fall in love with these things. And I think the answer is just having conversations, just like, you know, we talked before about like having conversations with people that are going to rip you to shreds. Have conversations with these people. They will rip you to shreds and you'll keep doing it. And over time, you'll convince somebody. And over time, eventually you'll win. We will win. Like the technology is, you know, the beauty of technology is that it's kind of like Pandora's box, right? It's like once it's out there, it's out there. You can't put Bitcoin back in the box, just like you can't put nuclear weapons or guns back in the box. You have to work with them, you know? And so that's what makes me like optimistic is like we will win, right? Like the technologists will win because we always win because we are on the side of the future, which is guess what? We're headed in only one direction, which is the future. We cannot go backwards, you know? So anyway, I really believe that this is all one thing and everyone's really aligned. And I personally, you know, I'm not that scared of like Facebook or Google or someone really trying to clamp down or shut down on Web3 stuff. And I you know, obviously you do have some of that. Like you, I think it's really going to come from the middle managers. Frankly, like the people who are at the center of these organizations are fearful of decentralization. Why? Because in that future, they don't have jobs, or at least they don't have the jobs that they currently have, right? Like it's like, I'm concerned about the VP, as you mentioned, the thousands of VPs at Microsoft. I'm not concerned about Satya Nadella. I think he's super smart. He wants the future. He wants technology. He gets it. Certainly a founder of a company would be better than a CEO, but I think generally the CEOs also kind of get it. I would be most fearful of the employees, frankly, like the Web2 employees. You know, it's kind of like the woke, kind of like the Coinbase, like a lot of those stories. Like, I think that's why it's so important to do what Coinbase kind of did, is to say, hey, look, we're going in this direction. And if you don't like it, leave. Like Balaji says, right? Entry or exit, right? Like you either work at the company, try to have the change that you care about happening, or you start your own company and compete. You know, the beauty of all this stuff. And what I always tell my friends who are very anti-crypto is if you don't like it, again, if this is just technology, then make better technology. That's it. Like you can win. If you believe, I mean, this is like $2 trillion, by the way, that if you do something better, like, and by the way, this market is so efficient that you will become a billionaire overnight, literally, right? Because that's the beauty of liquid, transparent markets is like the winners become winners much faster than in the old world. It's like efficient. It's scarily efficient. So anyway, I don't know really what point I'm making, but I find that people are generally pretty optimistic. And I think as long as you can center on like the technology, like when I get people excited about crypto, it's generally because of, you know, zero knowledge proofs and the sort of technological explanation behind NFTs. When you get into, just because that is what is currently exciting, it is still, you know, frankly, a very speculative kind of casino of assets. There's obviously value here. The SEC, ironically, the funniest thing to me is that the SEC is basically making it a casino in a way. Like their critique is there's not real value here. It is too speculative, but they're the ones doing that. Like in a second, they could make it very valuable. They would 10X, you know, it would like, it's not, you know, and I don't know. I just personally have this belief. It's almost religious, to be honest, which is I just believe the future is going to be awesome. And so I just believe that eventually, whether it's the SEC or whatever, an organization that replaces it, or we just say, F it, well, you know, like we don't care what the SEC says anymore. And there's too many of us and only one of them. And we have all the amazing engineers and they have none of them, right? This is also a sort of dynamic that is certainly happening. The best engineers are not going to work at the SEC. They're going to work at Coinbase. And so we will win and we will get our way. And that way is this amazing, beautiful sort of free market, right? That's going to lead to all this other awesome, amazing stuff. And so let's be nice to everybody because we're all going to be there together. And like, I don't know, I'm just, you know, politics and all these sorts of things. Like I'm a fan of just like the big tent sort of philosophy that I know many people are not.
No, it's a hell of an answer. Yeah. I always try and think about like how Web2 will react and how they'll shift. And honestly, the thing that I usually come back to is just, it's hard as hell for them to do what Web3 is doing, right? Like, hey, you want to give someone ownership in Facebook? Like, what are you going to give them, stock? Like, you can't just give them a token. Like, you just physically can't do the things that we're doing, right? It's just, you just hit a wall. Yeah.
You cannot. No, you cannot. Yeah. I mean, it's so painful. Even when, you know, when we did the regulation crowdfunding round, it was, you know, we spent probably, so we raised $5 million, which is not a lot. We raised $5 million. It probably cost us $250,000, so 5% of that, to just raise the money. Yeah, actually more. It was subsidized, but like, yeah, you know, because credit card, like, just, it's expensive, man. Like, this stuff is not cheap, and we had to write an 80-page report, submit it to the SEC, get it approved, hire an external audit, you know, law firm to audit us, accounting firm to audit us. You know, we had to provide 3 years of financial statements, which, you know, like, obviously crypto, you get that for free. But it was so painful. And it's like, or, you know, functionally, technologically, if I wanted to do the same thing, it would have taken me a day in crypto land, and it would have been close to free, right? And it would have been more accessible and cheaper and more liquid and more transparent. It would have been better, but I wanted to do it the Web 2 old school SEC way. So I can see, like, clearly there's a 10x better way of doing this, and the technology clearly exists, right? Like, I think, like, you know, one of the things I always tell my Web 2 friends is the example I always use is Uniswap. Like, I really think that is so, that clicked for me. Like, when I played with Uniswap for the first time, I was like, holy fuck, like, this is incredible. You know, a DAX or whatever, like, it's just a totally new paradigm, like, just totally new, doesn't exist really in that way at all in any other part of, you know, the internet, the world, whatever. And so, like, I see that, and I see that it's literally 10,000 times better than what we did. And the only difference, the reason we did this instead of the obviously better way, is because the SEC, you know, we wanted to do it by the book, by the SEC book, right? And so I literally talk to people in Congress and talk to people in, you know, at the SEC, like, I try to, and every time I'm like, we're like, this and this are the same. We're solving the same problem with totally different things. And, like, you can, you know, like, please just understand that, like, this is the same thing. And clearly crypto solving a real problem, because we had the problem and we tried to solve it. And it was so worth it to us to do it this way that we spent $250,000, right? Which no one in their right mind thinks. Even the SEC is like, yeah, it shouldn't be this slow and arduous, but it is, because we want to make sure that there are no scams. And, you know, the way we do it is we just make it stupidly expensive, and over time we'll make it easier, you know? And so they definitely will, right? Like, they definitely will make it easier and cheaper and faster. It's just going to take, you know, their time scale is like decades, literally, right? It's not. It's like, oh, did any scams happen in the first 5 years? No. Okay, cool. We'll make a change. Okay, let's wait 5 years. No scams? Cool. Literally, that's like...
Yeah. No, I'm with you. It has to get cheaper and easier. And I think it'll get there. I mean, it's funny you bring up the Reg A stuff. I remember years ago when I was first getting into crypto, there was obviously Blockstack that did their Reg A Plus, I think. And I think they didn't have that much money at the time. Versus obviously,
yeah, I think they raised like $1 million.
Yeah, they didn't raise that much. It cost them $1 million or $2 million, and they did it legit. And then the funny part was, you had EOS around the same time raise like $4 billion, and they got like a $25 million fine or something. Like, it made no sense at the time, the dichotomy between doing it right and doing it wrong.
Well, I'll tell you something crazy that we're probably both familiar with, because we both run kind of investment funds firms. Is like, the, you know, the SEC has these laws around how many people can invest in your fund, and how many limited partners you can have. And like, there's all these, you know, QPs, and like, there's, but like, that is incredibly sort of not anti-democratic, right? Because effectively you're saying, oh, you can only have rich people invest in funds, because if you only have 99 funds and you want to invest in a lot of stuff, you need those checks to be big, right? And it's insane.
See, Hill, it's not even the LP side. I mean, the thing that I have a problem with or struggle with is, if you want to be a founder of a fund, it's insanely expensive. And I mean, the requisites for doing so are insurmountable. Like, if you want to raise a $10 million fund, you can't do it. Like, it's not economical unless you're in crypto type upside. Like, it's not approachable to the traditional world the way it is.
Yeah, no, totally. It's, yeah. And so I think there's so much that, like, we could do, you know, to make it more accessible. And I always try to remind myself, though, that, like, the reason we get to even have these kinds of conversations and be so early is because of this stuff, right? Because if the SEC was like, oh, cool, Bitcoin, this is awesome, like, let's just get rid of securities laws and, like, you can just do whatever you want. We trust people, whatever. Like, you can gamble it all away. It doesn't matter. I personally would love that. You know, I think I would get a lot more, I would do a lot better in that world, I would like to think. But, you know, that's not how they think about it. But the beauty, you know, if they did, then, like, it would have been too late for us. You know, we wouldn't have been able to get into it, because it would have, the ship would have sailed like decades ago, or, you know, like, it would be a totally different timeline. And so I like to remind myself, like, the reason Gumroad was the first Reg CF company ever to raise $5 million is because of this sort of how slow this old system is to change. It's just weird to me that, like, the future is so clearly on the wall and it's not happening fast, right? And, like, that is so frustrating.
That's a really good way to put it. I mean, when you go to somebody and you say, hey, man, you know, if we were a little bit more progressive, every Uber driver would own part of Uber and part of a token and earn fees, but instead they own nothing and can only buy it in the secondary market after the IPO. Like, what's the pushback? you know?
Yeah.
One thing that makes me very optimistic is, and I really think like Elon is very underrated in this way. Obviously, he's incredibly rated, whatever, person of the year. But like the idea that a single human being can effectively become like he's like an influencer on like just like a scale that I think no one's ever really seen before. And he has something that very few influencers have, which is effectively unlimited amounts of capital. And so I believe like my, you know, kind of crystal ball would say that like there's going to be a moment just like the GameStop stuff kind of happened in January that's going to create an opportunity for someone at that scale to basically point every single person in this set and you know, at this single problem and say, hey, look, if we just change this one number or we change this thing over here, the world's just going to get so much more equal. The you know, if you care about equity, diversity, equity, inclusion, this thing is going to improve it 10x. And if you can get enough people to all care about, you know, this is the hard thing about traditional politics. You have to get everyone to care about the same issue at the same time, right? Like what's the George Floyd moment, right? Like you're not going to, it's not going to resonate, right? Nearly as much, but at some point that's going to happen. And like someone like an Elon is going to be like, hey, by the way, did you know that like you literally can invest in startups? Like I can, because I'm worth $1 million. And isn't that insane? And then you create this Occupy Wall Street-esque movement towards this very specific thing around sort of democratizing financial kind of inclusion. And you know, there's a lot there, but starting off with like the sophisticated investor accreditation rules, maybe what it takes to spin up a bank or hold a balance with of somebody else's money. I really believe at some point that's going to happen. And that's really how change happens, right? It's ultimately like the SEC is just on their back foot so strongly because like the macro environment, the market just gets what it wants eventually. And, you know, it's kind of like, once you have 100 million people beating down your door, like it's going to happen. And it's not even that controversial. It's like, oh, cool. You can now invest in startups if you're worth 10K instead of a million or whatever the rules may end up looking like. But it could happen. And it's actually a very simple change. You know, it'll be a page, right? And but you need Congress, you need the House, the Senate, the sort of SEC commissioner and the administration of the United States to all agree at the same time. But I don't know. I like what the events of 2020 and 2021 give me optimism that that can happen. That like the power of the internet is, and the power of crypto, the power of all these things we've been talking about is collective action, right? You can get everyone aligned on a certain kind of issue. And, you know, currently it's used to do things like try to buy a copy of the Constitution and things like that, which is also awesome because it spreads the word about all these amazing concepts and technologies. But ultimately, like imagine if you could get 10x that, but pointed at, we're going to try to make this change happen. Like we're so early. I think we're so early in that story and that narrative, you know, like I was talking to my wife yesterday. I'm like, wow, like people think Elon is like peak, you know, like barely, like that guy's been famous for like 2 years or a year, like ever since he's been on Joe Rogan or whatever. He's going to have unlimited amounts of capital and unlimited amounts of fame literally for the next 20 to 30 years. So we've barely seen like what the, like, you know, what's in his head, right? Like it has yet to manifest. So I don't know. It just makes me very optimistic for 2022 and the years beyond. And I personally think like there's room for everybody, right? It's not a zero sum game. The present is, there's only one, you know, there's like a fixed present, but like the future is, you know, we can grow whatever the future ends up looking like. And I don't know. I believe it'll happen. I believe strongly that all these things will play out. And, you know, everyone alive today who participates will look back, you know, in 2050 and be like, holy crap, the power of compounding is bonkers. Like, I don't know what 2050 looks like, but it will be crazy. You know,
you're right. It's kind of funny. You have like these young people, you know, 18, 19, you know, you brought up Hayden from Uniswap who built that, I think, in his mom's basement. Like, you have these people that clearly are not accredited investors, but are literally building the future of inclusion for everyone to invest around the world and be included, right? Like, it's so backwards that you have these people that are literally changing the dynamic, but don't fit into the old world by definition, right? It's wild to see. I'm with you. I think it'll change.
Yeah. Ultimately, the last people to be convinced are the people who get all the benefit from the existing system, right? Like the last people to reinvent, you know, the government will be the people in the government, you know, like just by nature, you know. And I actually think like one of my superpowers is I do have this like sort of this portfolio. I have Gumroad, I have my fund now, and that helps me be more honest about Gumroad, right? Because if Gumroad was my only thing, it would be much harder for me to admit the truth about it, for better or worse, right? Because it's kind of like, would you bite the hand that feeds you, you know, even if you see the hand falling off? Like, no.
See, Hill, I think you would be an insane Web3 founder, right? I mean, not to try and poach you or anything, but I mean,
I mean,
like you have like, no, honestly, like it's hard to convince, like the way you approach it with, you know, wanting to reward your community, wanting to fire yourself as a CEO, like wanting to make this all free, having all the inclusion, like trying to get away from the traditional world. Like this is like the Web3 founder playbook, right? And like you're saying it, some Web3 founders say it, but don't do it. So it's nice to see that you kind of are embracing it.
Yeah, I'm excited. I think, I don't know. I'm hopeful that 2022, I'll have more to say than just words. You know, hopefully I can put, just like I used Gumroad to do the crowdfunding thing, which is much more impactful than like a tweet about how cool crowdfunding is. If we can figure out a really interesting use case for you know, crypto in the Gumroad context in 2022, like we will do it. We will do it very unapologetically. Like we've seen what happened at Patreon and Discord, and like we know, you know, what the narrative will be, and we will just lean into it super hard because like that's the only way this stuff is going to change. It's not saying, oh, we apologize, you're right. No, it's the answer is you're wrong. You know, like let's have a conversation. But like, look, ultimately, like, you know, if you care about the planet, you know, there are better ways to kind of solve that problem. So I'm excited, you know, and I think the Gumroad superpower as a company is that we almost died, right? And so I kind of think about it like, you know, like the war movies where like someone almost dies and then they become like a badass because they kind of, it's all, you know, they're just playing with house money at that point, right? And that's kind of how I think about Gumroad. I'm like, well, what can we do? Because like, I'd almost rather, if we can like, if I can literally kamikaze Gumroad into the SEC and that is what creates the change for the rest of everybody, like I win anyway, because the cool thing is like I persist, you know? And my reputation persists and I will be only more interesting and famous and successful and whatever. And so, yeah, I'm very much thinking about, you know, and the cool thing is I have investors like Naval and other people who are like, they're not like, no, like, don't do that. Like, what? You're like thinking about comic, like, why would you even say that? Oh, like Naval's like, yeah, like, come on, like, you know, take some.
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah, no, it's definitely would be. And I would love to do it, to be honest. Like, I think what's happening Web3, like I spend most of my time or a lot of my time looking at all this cool stuff. And frankly, like, getting jealous, you know, like, damn, that's so freaky.
Well, see, Hill, I mean, we haven't seen like a Web2. So I'll leave you with this. Like, we haven't seen a Web2 company that has such a fantastic relationship with not only their customers, but the people building on them, like all of your creators. We haven't seen them move to Web3 yet in a big way. And I could be totally blanking on who it is, but like to see somebody make that shift. I mean, that in itself would be pretty big.
The thing I would love to do too is to figure out how do we bring everybody along, right? Like, I would love to bring a bunch of crypto people onto the cap table, the traditional cap table that we have, as part of doing figuring this thing out. But then also, like, you know, giving everybody who owns Gumroad equity a token that they were never promised, but just get as a gift. You know, like I think blending those two things together is going to be really, really important. And I think Gumroad is uniquely positioned to like do these sorts of things, you know, like Patreon is just kind of too big. Like they have an IPO in the next couple of years. Like they're not going to rock the boat, you know, but Gumroad, like we get off on rocking the boat. Like that's our thing. So no, I'm super excited. And I do think I remain optimistic, you know, whether it's on Ethereum or Solana or you know, maybe Cardano, probably not, but,
Sahil, don't make me jump through, man. I liked you.
I know. It's just kind of fun.
I'm not trying to poach you, and I had no like designs over this podcast. It's just incredible to meet somebody who has a Web2 company who has such a good relationship. And like, I mean, there's so much you can do here, man. Like, you could do curation with your community. You can share revenue. Don't kill me, officials. It's legal. you know, there's a lot of ways that you could do it.
Share revenue, right? Like that, but like, why can't we share everything else, right? Like decisions, even like we have a marketplace, like maybe there's curation built into that, or like maybe you don't get to decide, you know, you don't get the money, like the revenue, but you get to vote on what we do with it, right? Like what investments we make.
Yeah, I mean, the DAO.
Exactly, everything. Exactly. So there's a lot. And I think that's, you know, the sort of transitory period will include a lot of these sorts of things, right? So yeah, I don't know. We'll see. Definitely my 2022 sort of holidays coming up. Like I will be spending a lot of my time thinking about, you know, crypto. And actually my like big kind of project is to take my book, which I have this book that came out, The Minimalist Entrepreneur. And, you know, so I saw this very old school, like literally hundreds of years old process of writing a book. And I'm, you know, I can't help but think like, what's the crypto version of this, right? Like kind of, I talked about the incentives are so broken. The earliest fans get the worst sort of financial outcome and the latest people get the best deal. Like it's totally broken. And so I'm going to be, you know, writing some code and playing with Unity and seeing what does a Web3 book look like, you know? So
that's pretty cool. No, I definitely want to check out the book. I haven't read it yet. I was going to ask you in closing one question on it, but I mean, building off what you just said, I mean, the whole creator economy, you know, social token space is obviously super nascent, right? Like, I mean, crypto is young to begin with, but I don't think anyone has really nailed like how to do it. I mean, Jess from Seed Club does a fantastic job iterating here. I think he might be one of the ones to figure it out. But other than that, it's early. So definitely open to see what you can do here.
It's so early. I mean, that's the important thing, I think, for me and everyone listening is like, you're going to feel FOMO because you can look back at the past. You can't look at the future, but it's so early. Like, it's so, try to start, you know, as you mentioned, like, try to start a company, try to send money over the internet. Like, it's terrible, you know, like, it's so bad. It's there's so many, you know, every time you sign. I know. Yeah, exactly. Like, how many times do you reset your password for, you know,
it's a terrible experience.
It's so bad. It's so bad.
First step is forgetting your password. Yeah.
Hopefully we'll vote.
It's terrible. I hate it. Yeah. And especially like at our fund, like certain people have certain sign-ins and you got to, you know, go to their house, shoot down their door, ask them to do it. And then they forget their password.
Yeah. They have like a text and you're like, you got 5 minutes to respond. And it's like 2 a.m.
Yeah. Send me the code.
We're still figuring. Yeah. Like, it's like, we haven't even figured out like, how do we work with teams and, you know, many time zones, and you know, it's like so early. I don't know. I'm excited for the next 10 years.
Me too.
And hopefully Delphi is definitely playing in the future, and hopefully Gumroad will be too.
See, Heal, to close out, and this has been an incredible convo. I'm excited to hopefully do another one or help you with any Web3 plans you have. You know, Delphi's at your disposal here. But with The Minimalist Entrepreneur, your book, what would you say is the biggest takeaway? And biggest takeaway, I guess, not like preconceived notions when you wrote it, but you write the book, it's out there, you're thinking about it in the past, and you said, hey, you know what? This point had the most impact in reality. What would you say that is?
Yeah. I mean, I think the thing that I think has resonated the most and feels like the most impactful idea is that it just shrinks the sort of the cognitive overhead of like what a business even is. Like, I just think there's so much narrative. You know, you turn on like, I don't know, if you Google business, like, you know, what comes up? Like Facebook, right? Like Microsoft, like just like when people think of banks, they think of big, at least I do, like big buildings that have existed for like millennia sort of, right? Like how do you start a bank? Like just, I can't draw the line from where I'm at today to like that skyscraper, right? And so I think the book really helped people be like, oh, that's it? Like that's all a business is? Like it's like a little thing that like you sell some product or service, people give you money, and then you pay payroll with it and you pay taxes with it and everything else is kind of optional, you know, like that's all it's actually what made it click. Like DAOs had this moment like when someone's like, oh yeah, on-chain corporations, I'm like, that's impossible because corporations do a ton of stuff. I don't understand how you put all this stuff on chain. And it's like, oh well, actually it's really just like money comes in and then we decide where to send the money. And it's like, oh, I guess that's really all a company does, right? Like money comes into our bank account and then we pay people with it and we give some to the government and then, you know, we do it again next year. Like, that's it. So I think that's probably the key takeaway is that like, you know, when you're building a business, it can be really, really tiny. It should be something that I feel like anyone can do. That's what I love about the creator economy is that it really feels approachable and accessible to everybody. It's like, oh yeah, I can be a YouTuber. It's like, well, the only difference between you making a YouTube video and like, you know, I don't know, some famous, you know, like Casey Neistat is like, he's done it for a long time and he got really good and he has a big audience, but he has a business and you don't, and then there's no real difference. Like you have a laptop and an iPhone and so does he, and the sort of the gap is a lot smaller than you think. To me, I think that like whenever someone tells me that, like that makes me feel great, right? Because I remember when I was like a kid and I was like, I want to work as a build software, and like that means I'm gonna have to get a degree, then I'm gonna have to work in an office because the office, you know, I'm gonna need a supercomputer and like that requires an office because I'm not gonna have a super, and like literally that's what I thought, you know. I remember when Microsoft invested in Facebook, I just assumed that like Facebook was like a Microsoft property, like a Microsoft company, you know, like my vision of like reality of it was so distorted, which is like, yeah, I love that idea that like I can just make reality, you know, more real for somebody and be like, oh, that's it. Like I can do that. You know, I think the more of that, the better, right? Like the more people who like can read the Uniswap white paper or the Bitcoin white paper and be like, oh, that's it. Like, obviously it's not easy to implement and like, you know, it's but like it's possible, right? It's, you can do it, right? Like the story of Uniswap, I think, should be incredibly inspiring to people. Like you have to be very smart, but you can do it and you can certainly contribute to doing it, you know? And I don't know. I think that was a big takeaway. I think the other one is that just this idea of starting then learning. I think there's so many people who feel like they need to learn and learn and learn and learn and be super, super ready. But the truth is you'll never be ready.
and you probably have most of what you need to like make your first step. You don't need to like figure out step 2 to 10 before you take step one, and where, how you take step one is going to like change step two anyway, right? Like the market's going to react to you taking step one, and you're going to be like, oh, that was dumb, or that was great, and I'm going to do more of that or less of that, or try something new. But I just, yeah, I think feedback from the market is just the most important thing. And that only comes by starting and putting yourself out there. Either that's a business or your ideas or your words, but you have to like take the things in your head and put them out of your head, you know, and put them in a place where other people can see it, comment on them, get value from them, etc. So those are some of the things that I think are in the book that people hopefully will like.
I love it. Sahil, it's awesome talking to you, man. So casual. Clearly been through it. Know your stuff, man. This is a lot of fun. If you need any help, seriously, with anything you're doing, just let us know.
That was so fun. Yeah. Would love to work together on some of this stuff.
Thanks so much, Sahil.
Awesome. You're welcome.
Hey, everyone. Thanks for listening to the podcast. If you enjoyed it, please support the show by hitting subscribe on iTunes, writing a review, or sharing this episode on Twitter and LinkedIn. And stay tuned for our next episode out soon.